JG3 Number 2A.
So we've seen through Max Kapler's work in his epitome book on the structure of the Christian Science textbook then how in big generalities that science, theology, and medicine chapter, that the overall tone of science is seen in the mind, spirit, soul, principal main tones in the chapter. And then the overall tone of theology is seen in the life tone. And the overall concept of true medicine is seen in the truth tone. We know he says that there isn't a love tone that he could see in the chapter. And yet when one goes through it, one kind of more or less hears an overall tonality. And this is a divine principle, love. Anyhow, that's what I heard as we went through it. Terrific sense behind science, theology, and medicine. So what we want to just see this evening is I'm going to show you a little excerpts and talk about a little excerpts that Mrs. Eddy just gives out from the science tonality. A few of the reference that she would show under mind, a few of the references under what we have of mind here. Maybe some is mind is mind and mind is spirit. Then a few references under principle is mind, principle is spirit, principle is soul. As I say, allow me to talk in big generalities because I just want to build up an atmosphere. I do not, as they say, want to get involved in all the details. It's just tone, all, just tone. So in the chapter of science, theology, and medicine, you know, she begins there right at the beginning, and she shows there that, of course, under the tone of mind, she says, in the year 1866, I discovered the Christ science or the divine laws of life, truth, and love. And then she shows here that she says, when apparently near the confines of mortal existence, standing already within the shadow of Death Valley, I learned these truths in divine science, that all real being is in God, the divine mind, and that life, truth, and love are all powerful and ever present. And she said, I learned that this false sense of being evolves in belief, a subjective state of mortal mind, which the same so-called mind names matter, thereby shutting out the true sense of spirit. She says, my discovery that erring mortal misnamed mind produces all the organisms and actions of the mortal body, and this is the big point now, set my thought to work in new channels and led up to my demonstration of the proposition that capital mind is capital all and that matter is not, as a leading factor in capital mind science. And then she gives us the big tonality of her method of working. And this is our method of working. And we never want to forget this. She says here, and just under big tonality, for 3 years after my discovery, I sought the solution of this problem of mind healing, searched the scriptures and read little else, kept aloof from society, and devoted time and energies to discovery, to discovering a positive rule. The search was sweet, calm, and buoyant with hope, not selfish nor depressing. I knew the principle of all harmonious capital mind action to be God, and that cures were produced in primitive Christian healing by holy uplifting faith. Semicolon, in the but, huh? But, which as Max says, that's a very important point in text interpretation. She said, I must know the science of this healing. And I won my way to absolute conclusion through, and now comes her method, divine revelation, reason, and demonstration. So, you see, this is our method also, that we go out from the divine mind, and we see that this is a capital mind science, And our method in working in the capital mind science is always from the one mind which is God. Always, always we go out from that mind which is God is our mind. We have no other mind than the mind which is God. Mrs. Eddy said that Christian science is at the point of perfection. It never advances towards it. It's always there. We always go out from cause to effect. We begin with mind. So teacher is the divine mind. The student is the divine mind. And therefore, going out from the divine mind, our work is always through revelation, divine reason, and demonstration. That is one of the key points in science, as we know. Then she goes on to show that what she discovered was that life was in and of spirit, that we go out from the divine mind, and that we see, therefore, that everything in being is of the nature of idea. Whether if it's called through misunderstanding matter, then we work in the reversal of the pattern. But if it's seen as it is, then it is spirit. And spirit is the only reality. So our point is we go out from the divine mind and working through revelation, reason, and demonstration. We see the universe as it is in divine science. And she shows that the three great verities here of spirit are omnipotence, spirit possessing all power, she says. Omnipresence, spirit filling all space, and omniscience, spirit constituting all science. And she says that was the main point. And then she shows here also at this point that the equipotence of God is the proposition that mind is capital all and mind is good, hence the conclusion that there is the awful unreality called evil. So there is only God good going on, God spirit going on, and that her, evil is unreal, a counterfeit belief of spirit. And we know that her logic, we now know, is not a Aristotelian two-valued logic where spirit is real and matter is real, but it is a dual conceptual logic where only good is real and evil is unreal. And we know that she never uses the word counterfact in the textbook. It's always counterfeit, meaning that we're only dealing with divine values which are either understood or misunderstood. But this big point here, that omniscience, all science is divine. And then this big point in this tone here of mind, where she shows then, as I've already quoted it, one right here, from the infinite one in Christian science. Reasoning always goes out from the infinite one in Christian science, the science itself level, comes one principle, and we could say it's universal idea, divine science. And with this infinitude comes spiritual rules and laws, absolute Christian science, and there demonstration. So this is the impulse that is happening in the world today as we see impacting science, theology, and medicine. And then another big point here that we want to keep always in mind as we see that she shows then that the aim of science is always then in the third degree, mortal mind disappears and man is God's image and appears, so that God in his idea may be to us what divinity really is and must be, all inclusive. And then she says, mind science touches the grand point where works on metaphysics do not. It crowns the power of capital mind as a messiah, and it carries the day against physical enemies, even to the extinction of all belief in matter, evil, disease, and death. It insists upon the fact that God is all, therefore matter is nothing beyond an image in mortal mind. Then, again, just in big tones, we see in the principal tonality of this chapter, under still science, because science covers mind, spirit, soul, principle in their main tones, looking at the main tone of principle, just picking out big points again. You can see she at here we have under that tone of principle that the ever-operative divine principle replaces the concept of a material science with the science of God. And as mind, we see that science bases itself on the divine mind, not on human beliefs. And under the marginal heading scientific basis, she says that science is a revelation of capital truth. Therefore, all science is divine. See, that's where it comes. That's just what I wanted to pick out and show you. And that being based on truth, we have then the principle of all sciences here. And that in a marginal heading of right interpretation, that the universe, like man, can be understood when interpreted by science from its divine principle, God. And she says, science is neither a law of matter nor of man. It is the unerring manifesto of capital mind, the law of God, its divine principle. Mm-hmm. Those slides just cover the main point. All right. Then I'd like to show us quickly a few more points here from Mrs. Eddy. For example, now looking at miscellaneous writings under the article Spirit and Law, she shows we are accustomed to think and to speak of gravitation as a law of matter. She says, while every quality of matter in and of itself is inert, inanimate, and non-intelligent, she says, wherever law is, capital mind is. Wherever law is, mind is. Isn't that terrific? And then she says, the distinction between that which is and that which is not law must be made by capital mind and as capital mind. And then she says in Cause and Effect article in Miscellaneous Writings, she says, a falling apple suggested to Newton more than the simple fact cognized by the senses, to which it seemed to fall by reason of its own ponderosity. But the primal cause or mind force, invisible to material sense, lay concealed in the treasure troves of science. True, Newton named it gravitation, having learned so much. But science, with a capital S, demanding more, pushes the question, whence or what is a power back of gravitation? And she says, the intelligence that manifests power. Is pantheism true? Does mind sleep in the mineral or dream in the animal and wake in man? She says, Christianity answers this question. The prophet, Jesus, and the apostles demonstrated a divine intelligence that subordinates so-called material laws, and disease, death, winds, and waves obey this intelligence. She says, what is capital mind or matter that spake in creation and it was done? The answer is self-evident, and the command remains, thou shalt have no other gods before me. So she shows, therefore, here, then, that where law is, mind is, and that really what Newton named gravitation as a law of matter is really, therefore, as she goes on to show in other ways, the law of gravitation is a law of the capital mind. So we can see that if we talk about mind as having the qualities of adhesion, cohesion, and attraction, that could be seen as a buoyancy principle. That which held Jesus up, it worked for him, that law of gravitation, as an attraction, adhesion, cohesion, and attraction held him up as he walked on the water from his standpoint of observation. But seen from a material definition, the adhesion, cohesion, and attraction pulled him down. It's the same law, either seen from the standpoint of science, you can walk on the water with it, or seen from material science, you sink. It's the law of gravitation. And she said it's the law of mind. It should hold us up, you see. So we see then that this is having an impact on the world today, where the structure of reality and the structure of consciousness and the structure of nature, that it's all beginning to be categorized, eventually will be categorized all under the category of the science of God. So slowly but surely, we have to want to see how the scientists may be evolving towards this point. So these are just, again, big, big generalities. I just chose here and there different points that the scientists are talking about. Some scientists show then that their goal and key is to show that the structure of the logos creativity then, or the structure of being, is the same as the structure of consciousness, and therefore, and the structure of nature. Max shows us in this in his book, Man, the Thinker or Thought Of, that it is arriving at the conclusion that these scientists see that there is a, what they kind of call the structure of the logos creativity, those laws of life, truth, and love, are not only behind man's thinking, but also the same structure behind what they called unthinking nature. And the scientists say that man and nature participate in a common reservoir of information, which feeds equally both nature's behavior and man's comprehension. So we can see then that what they're showing is that the structure of the logos creativity, or the structure of reality, ultimately is the same as the structure of consciousness and the structure of nature. That the structure of consciousness and the structure of nature both pull their information from one reservoir of information, a divine a logos creativity, or logos creativity. Okay, so let's have some fun with what the scientists say they want to do, and to see if we hear some kind of an impact. For example, Leon Lederman, a director at the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory near Chicago, said there that we hope to explain the entire universe in a simple formula. Interesting, isn't it? Then we get here that they're looking for a theory of everything, a complete description of the world in terms of a closed system of logical truths, where all physical laws, now they call it physical laws, but we don't mind at the point. We know that that these laws will take on a higher connotation eventually to them, that all physical laws could be unified into a single mathematical scheme, that they are after the search for the TOE, the toe, huh? The theory of everything. And that it has become something of a holy grail of physicists. If the universe is a manifestation of rational order, they say, then we might be able to deduce the nature of the world from pure thought alone, without the need for observation or experiment. These are my notes mainly from Paul Davies' books on the cosmic blueprint, or the mind of God. And we see that, just going on, just reading out from my notes, this opens up the beguiling process that the world, prospect that the world can be understood through the application of logical reasoning alone. Could it be that much, if not all, of the physical universe might be as it is as a result of a logical necessity? Some scientists have indeed claimed that this is so, that there is only one logically consistent set of laws and only one logically consistent universe. To investigate this sweeping claim, we must inquire into the nature of the laws of physics. These are things, as I say, coming right from Paul Davies. And now here we have in his introduction to The Mind of God by Davies, under the title there, The Scientific Basis for a Rational World, we have then Davies giving the reason why he called his book The Mind of God. He said he was quoting from Stephen Hawking in his concluding passage of his book, A Brief History of Time, where at the very end we know, those of us who have read the book or had seen excerpts of it, Stephen Hawking says, if we do discover a complete theory, it should in time be understandable in broad principle by everyone, not just a few scientists. Then we shall all, philosophers and scientists, and just ordinary people, be able to take part in the discussion of why it is that we and the universe exist. If we find the answer to that, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reasoning, for then we would truly know the mind of God. Nice, isn't it? Then, some more from, again, just keeping coming out from, now this is a quote from The Cosmic Blueprint by Paul Davies under the category of New Discoveries in Nature's Creative Ability to Order the Universe. It was from an anonymous quote on the top. He said there, whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. And then he shows how he sees. And Davies, these are my notes, as you can well tell off to the side. But down the middle is the way Davies says it. He says, therefore, that what is the source of creative power? He says, the Big Bang. He said, immediately following it, it was a universe of featureless, it says there was a Big Bang, and immediately following the universe's featureless, chaotic state, structure and complexity emerged afterwards. Every branch of science ran on the self-organizing principles shaping matter and energy, spontaneously towards higher states of order and complexity. He says that went against the sense of it being accidental products of random forces or rare chance events. He says, or the origin of life, the natural end state of cycles of self-organizing chemical reactions, was it predestined? And he says, it looks like there was a cosmic blueprint behind everything. I'll just use the time available to us just to show you some more points. And then in his point of the blueprint for a universe, Davies says, under the title The Origin of Things, the central question of this book is, what is the source of the universe's creative potency? How can the universe, having come into being, subsequently bring into existence totally new things by following the laws of nature? How does organization and complexity arrive in nature? You see, these are the questions that they're asking. Down the middle is Davies' words. He says that the scientific quest is a journey into the unknown. Each advance brings new and unexpected discoveries and challenges our mind with unusual and sometimes difficult concepts. But through it all runs the familiar thread of rationality and order. We shall see that this cosmic order is underpinned by definite mathematical laws that interweave each other to form a subtle and harmonious unity. The laws are possessed of an elegant simplicity and have often commended themselves to scientists on the grounds of beauty alone. Yet these same simple laws permit matter and energy to self-organize into an enormous variety of complex states, including those that have the quality of consciousness and can in turn reflect upon the very cosmic order that has produced them. Isn't that wonderful? Then we'll close with this. We know then here that Werner Heisenberg gave us in his book Physics and Beyond, he said, the problems of values is nothing but the problems of our acts, goals, and morals. It concerns a compass by which we must steer our ship if we are to set a true course through life. The compass itself has been given different names by various religions and philosophies: happiness, the will of God, the meaning of life, to mention just a few. The difference in the names reflect profound differences in the awareness of different human groups. I have no wish to belittle these differences, but I have the clear impression that all such formulations try to express man's relatedness to a central order. So it shows that our work in discovering is working out to find a central order. And then finally, we end with Davies saying, I assume that the laws of nature are obeyed at all times. And then he says, where do these laws come from? What is the origin of the logic upon which all scientific reason is founded? Sooner or later, we have to accept something as given, whether it is God's, a set of laws, or logic. That's the impact. And we can see how our science, as we work out from the laws of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science this week, how they answer these questions.